Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Tuesday, May 7th, and this is your FT News Briefing. Even more money is being thrown at artificial intelligence, this time in the United Kingdom. And the Hollywood studio Paramount is having a hard time sealing a deal. Plus, Mexican marijuana and poppy farmers used to make bank off their crops, but synthetic drugs are the hot new thing.
It's a sort of trafficker's dream business, the fentanyl business.
I'm Mark Filipino, and here's the news you need to start your day. SoftBank is leading what is now Europe's largest artificial intelligence deal. The Japanese conglomerate is organizing a $1 billion investment in the UK self-driving startup called Wave. The funding round includes other big names in AI like Microsoft and NVIDIA. The money would help Wave launch its autonomous systems in cars. The startup has developed software that allows vehicles to learn while driving, and it's in talks with several car makers. So aside from $1 billion being a very large number, why is this a big deal? Well, we are always curious to see what SoftBank is investing in, but this is also a major development for the UK because the country wants to be a global hub of AI research. The American studio Paramount has been a legend in Hollywood. It owns CBS, it brought you The Godfather, and, of course, Titanic. But it hasn't kept up with the streaming revolution. Its stock is down 73% over the past 5 years. So maybe an offer from the production company Skydance to buy Paramount could turn things around. Here to tell us more is the FT's Anna Nicolau. Hey, Anna.
Hi, Mark. How's it going?
I'm good. I'm glad to have you with us. So this potential deal from Skydance has received major backing by some Hollywood power players. What do we know about it?
Yeah, so Skydance, it's a relatively new company. It was founded in 2010, I believe, by David Ellison, who is the son of Larry Ellison, who was the co-founder of Oracle. And so basically in the past several months, Skydance and David Ellison have been in talks with Shari Redstone, who controls Paramount. It's very complicated financially because it has its own separate holding company. But what we know about the deal is that it appears to be preferred by Shari Redstone. Effectively, Skydance would be acquiring the Redstone's National Amusements Company, which is a much smaller company than Paramount. And then the second part of it would be that Skydance and Paramount would then merge together and to form this bigger company.
Mm. So what are some of the hurdles to that deal?
One of the big obstacles is that the Paramount shareholders might object to that. And that's been one of kind of the thornier parts of this, is trying to figure out a way to make them feel, I guess, included or receive some kind of payout in the deal. There have been some shareholders that have spoken out saying they think that this benefits Shari Redstone because she gets $2 billion, whereas the Paramount shareholders kind of just get swallowed into this larger company and hope that under new management and this new structure that things will improve.
So, Anna, what other obstacles have come up during the negotiations for the deal for Skydance to take over Paramount?
So there's another bidder that's come in, and that's obviously a big obstacle. Just last week, Apollo, the private equity company, and Sony, the studio, announced their intention to offer $26 billion for Paramount. That bid has been viewed, I would say, a bit more positively by shareholders in Paramount. It would give them a payout in addition to just the Redstone family.
Are there any concerns about the Apollo-Sony deal? I imagine there might be.
People in Hollywood are a bit afraid of it, it seems. The fear is that, one, Apollo is a private equity company, and they're known for coming in, selling stuff off, moving things around, cutting costs. And there's also a fear that Sony and Paramount, there's only five really major studios left in Hollywood. You combine them, you're down to four. And there's a fear that there will be tons of layoffs and redundancies associated with that and just one fewer studio to pitch stuff to. I've definitely heard a lot from various people, executives, creative people that are afraid of that bid.
Okay, so this is really interesting. And I'm wondering, this uncertainty over the future of Paramount and the fact that it could lead to more consolidation in the industry, what does it mean for Hollywood as a whole?
I think people view it as quite negatively. To put this in perspective, there have already been so many layoffs and so many cost cuts in the past few years. You had the writer's strike last year that really weighed on people in the industry. You've had this kind of reversal in sentiment about streaming. And a lot of the biggest companies in Hollywood have seen their stocks fall quite a lot. And it seems like for a while now, there's just been this feeling that things are very unsettled. And things are changing so quickly, and no one really knows how it's going to pan out. There's a lot of fear right now, and I think Paramount is almost hitting upon that fear.
Anna Nicolaou covers the U.S. media and Hollywood for the FT. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you, Mark.
The European Union is clamping down on Russia's political influence. The bloc is going to propose a ban that would stop Moscow from funding political parties, NGOs, and think tanks. It's part of a new round of broader sanctions that come as the EU heads toward parliamentary elections next month. Member states have been dealing with a slew of Russian disinformation campaigns. The draft proposal prohibits funding for those campaigns and also calls for a ban on some media outlets from broadcasting in Europe. Mexico's opium and marijuana trade used to be the economic backbone for drug cartels. Remember El Chapo? I mean, that stuff was his bread and butter. But the drug trade has changed in recent years, and that's had huge economic consequences for the region, as well as the people who live there. The FT's Michael Stott has been looking into the issue, and he joins me now. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Mark.
Michael, can you set the scene for us? How did the opium and marijuana trade shape certain regions of Mexico?
So what the opium and marijuana trade did for these remote rural areas of northwestern Mexico was provide them with a stable source of money and employment for decades, really, going back to the 1940s. I mean, these were crops that they could grow, which gave the peasants and the local villagers reliable incomes. And also, of course, the cartel bosses had a stake in the area, and some of the money from their trade would flow back to that area. So it was not a sort of enormous amount of wealth that was going into these areas, but it was a stable, steady source of money and employment for a lot of the villages. But of course, that's all changed now.
Yeah, what happened to the poppy and marijuana trade that was supporting this region?
Well, the bottom dropped out of the opium and marijuana markets almost at the same time. So there were two things that were responsible for that. On the marijuana side, it was legalization. So the legalization of marijuana in a lot of American states meant that the biggest, most obvious export market for Mexican marijuana disappeared. And then on the opium side, there was a growth of synthetic opioids like fentanyl, which is much easier to produce, can be produced in a much more concentrated form, is much more profitable for the traffickers, and much easier for them to escape detection. So it's a sort of trafficker's dream business, the fentanyl business.
Yeah, it sounds a lot sleeker and more efficient than the poppy, opioids, and marijuana business. But what has it meant for the drug cartels?
Well, fentanyl has been an enormous boon for the Mexican cartels. They've been making huge amounts of money off it. According to the United States, the Mexican cartels are by far the biggest suppliers of fentanyl to the US. But the issue there, Mark, is that the money's really flowing to the cities. So Culiacán, which is the capital of the northwestern state of Sinaloa, has continued to enjoy an economic boom with money from the drug trade in part, but it's all in the city. It's not in the rural areas. So the rural areas are really being bypassed by the fentanyl trade.
Okay, so these communities that relied so heavily on marijuana and poppy crops for opioids, are they able to turn to any alternatives for economic generation, or are they just kind of going to struggle for the foreseeable future?
Well, to try to answer that question, we went to La Tuna, which is the hometown of El Chapo. It's where he was born and brought up and where his mother lived until she died recently. And what we found there is that the economy locally has been devastated. What we saw in some villages was that villagers telling us more than 3/4 of the population have left in the last 3 years. There's simply very few alternatives. I mean, these are remote areas, they're agricultural areas, but there's very little water. So they don't have the option of growing things like avocados or berries, which other parts of Mexico with better water supplies can do. There are really very few options for them. And as a result, they were going to look for other opportunities in other towns or in the United States.
Michael Stott is the FT's Latin America editor. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Mark.
You can read more on all of these stories at FT.com for free when you click the links in our show notes. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back tomorrow for the latest business news.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.